We're doing Sefer Amidot. We're up to page Shin Lamed Gimel. Perek Shlishi. We're discussing hatred. The Magen Midovne had described one cause for hatred. He had described jealousy. And now he continues and says, Asibah Shenit El Asinam, second great cause of hatred. Hiraoto B'Chaverot, because one sees in his friend, Davar Ma'us V'Nivzeh Be'inav, he sees something that he finds disgusting, despicable. Or he did something that this person feels he shouldn't have done that. And because his friend did something like that to him, he hates him. To the point where he despises his friend as though his friend were vermin, were despicable. And that could bring a person to take revenge, to maintain enmity. He anticipates a time when he will be able to knock down the other guy to the point where he won't be able to get back up. And his soul is yearning, is thirsting, is hungering to see this person have it bad. He wants to see ill befall the other person. And when he sees this other person as he stumbles, as he falls, he rejoices, he says, great. And it's so pleasant to him as though he found the greatest loot. This is what the Navi calls rejoicing at someone else's downfall. When someone else has it bad, one rejoices. So this seems very far-fetched. We all tell ourselves, nah, not me. But in life, it's not exactly accurate. This is a sentiment that can creep into a person's life. This is a sentiment that can be a part of a person's life. And the first point the Magen Midovne tells us about this sentiment is that when one rejoices at someone else's fall, that is Siba atzuma le'orer rachamei Hashem al chaverot. That in and of itself is a great cause in heaven to arouse mercy for the other guy. If God sees that Shimon is very happy when Yosef falls in the pit, so that's a big reason in heaven that God will have mercy on Yosef. La'ashiv ma'alav af Hashem, so that even if God was pretty upset at Yosef, God takes back his anger. V'yanicheu al rosh ha'ish hazeh ha'samech b'fit chaverot. And God takes that anger and places it on Shimon's head because Shimon was so happy when harm befell Yosef. K'ma'amar, as the verse says, min folo yivchal tismach. The verse in Proverbs says, do not rejoice, do not be happy when your enemy falls, uvi kashlo, and when he stumbles, al yagel libecha, don't let your heart rejoice. Penireh Hashem v'ra be'inav, lest Hashem see it, and it will be bad in God's eyes, ve'eshiv me'alav apo, God will take his anger off of this guy and put it on the one who was rejoicing at his fall. V'anachnu b'nei Yisrael muzarim v'omdim, and we, the people of Israel, are forewarned. Lo tisna t'achicha bilvavecha. The Torah says, do not hate your brother in your heart. Lo tikom lo titoret b'nei amecha. Don't take revenge, don't maintain enmity in your heart. V'avtan racha kamocha, love your friend as yourself. Yes.
That's a commandment between Jewish people?
Yes. Yeah.
It's an odd thing because it's almost like, you know, somebody did a big avera and you want to do him a hesed. You know, you're going to get the anger off of him onto you. It's selfless. It's strange. In other words, if Hashem judges people according to their merits, or mismatters, it shouldn't make any difference. Yes, I could see him obviously judging you harshly if you did something like that. But to say that that somehow, you know, takes away his, it's an odd thing. You don't think so?
So it doesn't say that Hashem won't punish him ultimately if he deserved it. It says that if right now Hashem has seen fit to express his wrath against this person, so then Hashem will delay that. Hashem will take it and put it on the one who rejoiced at his downfall. If Yosef deserved Hashem's wrath and he doesn't do tshuva, so then he'll also get that wrath. But for the time being, he will have a respite and another opportunity to do tshuva because Hashem will stop the punishment and take it on the other person. Right?
But the idea is, you know, it's sort of a roundabout way of saying to you, almost, that's such a natural thing for you to want to think. Don't do it, because by doing it, you're actually helping him.
Right.
Which kind of feeds into that mindset that, but catering to our lower self that wants that revenge. It's odd, I thought. Anyway.
You're saying you should have just said, like the Torah says, don't take revenge, don't take...
Well, it'll be bad for you.
I hear. I hear. Well, it's a pasuk. He didn't invent it.
Okay.
That's a pasuk in Mishlei. Yeah, but that interpretation is in Chazal. It's already in the Midrashim. It's not
even more than.
This isn't his chiddush here. Yes.
Can't they say that just the sheer fact that someone's rejoicing that someone else is suffering itself a kind of disgrace or whatever that alleviates the further punishment or whatever that Hashem might have needed to give the person?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. ולאהוב את חברו את אשר יאהב לנפשו, למען יחיה האדם חיי אדם, לא חיי בהמה וחיות היער. To love one's fellow man, the way one loves oneself, is to really live a human life. Not to live like the animals, the wild animals of the forest. כי הם יבקשו רק את אשר יאהב עליהם. The animal only seeks that which is pleasant to it. Gam nitrof teref, gam nidros v'lirmos. The wild animal is willing to devour others, to attack others, to trample others. Vagadol bolei akatan agibor tachalash. The larger one swallows the smaller one. The more powerful one defeats the weaker one. What Darwin called survival of the fittest. Aval ata lochen, natan lecha Hashem Elokecha. No, but you shouldn't live a life like that. Just as the human body is compiled of limbs and sections, everyone gets what it needs. The blood, the heart pumps the blood. Different parts of the body get different amounts of blood in accordance with what they need. The hands are given the capacity to feel. The feet are given the capacity to walk. We taste with our palate. The eyes to see. The ears to hear. And just as different limbs have different tasks, they have different names, they have different tendencies, they are composed differently, they have different strengths and weaknesses. The body can succeed and exist when there is unity between them, when they act in cohesion. אז שם כללי מקיף אותם ונקרא גוף. Then you look at it and say, that's one body. אבל בהתפרד דברים נשמע על רעהו, but when there's suddenly a struggle between the limbs, אז נהרס בניין הגוף משלמותו. So then you have a situation of destruction. We know that, right? There's a medical situation where the body fights itself, right? Where the immune system starts destroying itself. יש אשר בהדרו יכבד עליו קיומו. There are limbs where if one lacks that limb, then his existence is difficult. With certain limbs, a person can't live without them. By the same token, the house of Israel is like one body. That body is divided into limbs. And when the limbs can unite with love, then they're unified. And the building can last. Everyone says this. It's an interesting phenomenon. Both religious and those that are non-observant Jews, everyone says that when we are unified, that's when we can stand up against any enemy. Last year we went for a special trip to Rav Nachum Rom. He's a rabbi who lives in Har Nof, tremendous genius, Torah sage who really has a mastery of, some of you remember probably, we spoke to him, and he could quote to you, I think, any page in Shas, Gemara, Rashi, Tosus, a brilliant mind. And about 40 years ago, he was one of the soldiers who freed the Western Wall, who freed Jerusalem. He was one of the soldiers who fought in the Six-Day War. And one of the things he told us was about how the TV at the time would show the masses of Egyptian soldiers ready to kill us. They showed pictures, you could see videos of soldiers standing there chanting how they're going to kill every one of us. And you'd see in the video, miles. You could see they had so many soldiers, it seemed impossible we would win. They prepared whole stadiums as burial grounds. They were so sure, our own generals were so sure we would have so many casualties. And you had a situation where no one knew how we could win this war. Everyone looked at the war and it seemed impossible. And at the time, he said, what was interesting was there was a tremendous spirit of unity. Outside Israel, Jews all over the world were fretting. Everyone was concerned because it seemed like the little state was about to perish. And inside Israel, you had tremendous achdut. Everyone knew we're standing together, we're going to succeed. No one knew how. But once everyone felt that we're united, so then there was this feeling, we're not going to lose because we're united. And throughout our history, I'm saying the short history of the state of Israel, but throughout our history, this is something which every politician and general has at some point or another made reference to. If we can only be united, we can stand up to our challenges. Our biggest problem is divisiveness from within. Our enemies are problematic. It's not a joke. The challenges we face are real. And nonetheless, our success is contingent on our unity. So this is something which the Magen Midubna wrote long before we had the land of Israel back in our possession. And nonetheless, he's saying we view ourselves as a people, as one body. And then if the body can be whole, if the body could be at peace, so then the body can succeed. When hearts begin to be divided one from the other, they're like a body that's dissected to limbs. And then even though you can have all the limbs together, but they're dissected. So each one seems to be whole, but separate from the rest. They're placed each on their own. That's when they become dry bones. The same is true about us as a people. We are really from one root and one soul. In heaven, we're united. All the souls of the house of Jacob are one. But if we are divided from one another, then we lose that tremendous value, that tremendous gift that we have, that when limbs are united, they can accomplish, so do we as a people. When we're divided, we lose our capacity to accomplish. And that's why our second temple was destroyed. And that's why we lost the presence of God from our midst, because we ceased to have unity. Just as life leaves the limbs when they are severed, so too the people of Israel have lost their holy capacity because we are divided. Someone once asked Rav Soloveitchik how he views the machlokas, the argument between Hasidim and Misnagdim. And he said, you know, we were united at the gates of Auschwitz. It seems like we should be past that, so that we can have differences and still be unified. And I think that's one of the great accomplishments of Am Yisrael in the last half a century. I think we've overcome a lot of our differences. We have a tremendous unity, and we're headed in the right direction. I spoke to Rav Bigun a number of years ago. I don't remember what happened. I think it was after the Jewish expulsion from Gush Katif. And I was pretty depressed. So I asked him how he views the situation of Klal Yisrael. So he said to me, we're making a lot of headway. We're on a good path. I said, how do you see that? He said, look, I remember 30 years ago. You'd be embarrassed to walk around with a yarmulke 30, 40 years ago. He said, a Jew in Israel was embarrassed to walk around with a yarmulke. It was an embarrassment. Today you're not embarrassed. We've made a lot of headway. You should be proud. I'm saying we keep moving forward. It's true that the headlines focus on our problems, but if you look beyond the headlines and you see what's really going on in Am Yisrael, there's tremendous, tremendous headway, and we're headed in the right direction. We each have to focus on this point. It's very easy to find what's wrong. It's very easy to find reasons not to like my neighbor, to discuss what's wrong with A and B and C and why I should not be at peace with him. It's harder, but it's more important to find how to overcome that and, yes, be at peace with him. It takes work, but that's one of our great duties. That's part of how we rebuild the third temple, by bringing back unity to Klal Yisrael. And if it were easy, it wouldn't carry such a great weight. The fact that this is the root of our success is an indicator that this isn't something that's easy to accomplish. I have good reason to hate my neighbor. I have many reasons I could tell you why this neighbor did this that's wrong and that neighbor did that's wrong. The closer you get to people, the more you can point at their faults. And this starts at home. This starts with one's siblings, with one's parents. One has to be able to make peace. And then it extends. It's very hard. You could tell me, you know, the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em is the mitzvah that the Shulchan Aruch says is a hard mitzvah. It's difficult. Yeah, it's hard. And having peace with your neighbor, but he wronged me, right? I'm not saying you have to forgo everything, but we are saying you have to be at peace. I had a nice lesson yesterday. I told you the story about this guy who had a job done by mistake. I hired a worker. He was supposed to come to my parents' house. Ended up going to this guy's house. So I went over to talk to this guy after the worker fixed something for him that really was supposed to fix for my parents. And the guy is arguing with me. So I said to him at one point in the argument, I said, you know, I'd like to ask you for one favor. At the end of this argument, I want you to still be my friend. So he looked at me and said, how dare you say that? Even now, as I argue with you, I'm your friend. So I like that line. Yeah, he's got a point.